The criminal background of the Waukesha Parade attack suspect has been well documented, with a history of domestic abuse and other violent charges. Studies have shown that mass shooters also tend to have histories of domestic violence. We're learning more about how abuse can escalate into even more serious violence and how the criminal justice system handles these cases. Danielle Romaine Dagenhart is an associate professor in the Department of Criminal Justice and Criminology at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. Danielle, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me here.
Danielle, we probably all have an idea in our minds of what constitutes domestic abuse. In the eyes of the law, though, what rises to the level of a chargeable, a prosecutable offense when it comes to domestic violence?
So most of the things that would rise to the level of being a chargeable offense would be something related to physical violence or violent crime in nature, perhaps threatening of violent crime. And occasionally you'll see property destruction as well, or trespassing on someone's private property when they're not allowed to be there.
And I know there are concerns that an initial incident of domestic abuse or domestic violence might be a predictor, both of more of the same or maybe even more severe domestic abuse, and even in some cases of public violence. I know this is a hard issue to research, though. What do we know about what that first instance might mean about future behavior?
Yeah, so one thing to caveat is that not all offenders of domestic violence go on to escalate in their offenses, but those that do, you tend to see a pattern of escalation that's partially related to more of controlling and intimidating behavior, and additionally having more injuries that are present in instances as they continue to escalate.
So when someone has had that first charge of domestic abuse, maybe even before they've gone through a court proceeding and a deal or a conviction or anything like that, what kind of things can, say, a court do to protect the victim, in this case, from being abused again?
Yeah, so if the person or if I should say if the victim or a third party has called the police about an incident, at least in the state of Wisconsin, there's an automatic 72-hour no contact order as the result of the arrest. And then if cases are charged, then there would be an automatic no contact order in place for protecting the victim's safety the duration of the case.
Then after a conviction or a complete plea deal acknowledging some form of guilt, is there a system for protecting the victim after that acknowledgement of guilt?
Yeah, so if the person is on probation, which if it's their first offense of domestic violence, or if they don't have a very extensive criminal record, chances are they will be on probation. That no contact order typically extends to the duration of probation, so that while the person is serving the sentence in the community, that the victim can still feel a sense of safety. Anyone who is incarcerated, whether for a jail sentence or a prison sentence for domestic violence, typically they're notified prior to the release of the defendant.
How are those enforced, those no contact agreements?
Yeah, so they're just contingent on the case, which means if the case gets dismissed, the no contact order ends. If the defendant is violating the no contact order, it's really up to the victim or potentially a third party that has solid evidence to come forward to the prosecutor to let them know that the defendant has been trying to obtain contact, whether if it's that they're living back with the victim, if they're trying to contact them through like social media or texting or phone calls, or even coming to the person's residence or place of employment.
Now I want to get into trying to figure out when that domestic violence incident can be a predictor of wider public violence. I mentioned the Waukesha parade attack suspect, studies that show a large proportion of mass public shooting perpetrators have a history of domestic violence. But on the other hand, most domestic violence perpetrators, I guess, don't end up doing this kind of larger scale public violence. What do you look at when you look at trying to suss out that connection?
Yeah, so I think part of it is when researchers have studied domestic violence offenders, we tend to know that they don't specialize. So most offenders aren't just doing domestic violence or violence within the family or the home. So they're doing other kinds of crime. But factors that are more likely to escalate to some kind of mass public violence is typically having other aspects in their criminal history that are indicators of violence or dangers to public safety.
Danielle Romaine Dagenhart is with us, associate professor in UW-Milwaukee's Department of Criminal Justice and Criminology. We're talking today about domestic violence and its link to other kinds of violence, including mass casualty attacks like the Waukesha parade incident. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think there's a need for the criminal justice system to handle domestic abuse differently? If so, what would you change? Does the bail system need to be reformed? If so, how? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Right now, we're picking up the conversation with Danielle Romaine Dagenhart. She's an assistant professor at UW-Milwaukee in the Department of Criminal Justice and Criminology. She's with us today talking about domestic violence and the criminal justice system, how it treats domestic violence cases and tries to prevent new incidents in the future. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about how domestic violence is treated in the legal system? Have you or someone you know, if you're willing to share the story, survived domestic abuse? How did the system work or fail to work? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Danielle, are there systems out there? We hear in some communities with drug charges, for example, drug courts where people go and the goal is not so much punishment, but trying to prevent future crimes, future arrests. Is there anything like that? Treatment options to prevent that first offender from committing future acts of violence?
Yes. In fact, in Milwaukee County, they have domestic violence courts that essentially are problem-solving courts, where the main focus is both victim safety and offender accountability combined with offender rehabilitation. And across the nation, there's over 200 domestic violence specialty courts that take that kind of an approach. It's kind of similar to drug treatment court, but given the nature of domestic violence, it's a little bit more focused on accountability. So taking accountability for one's actions and potentially reducing recidivism.
Potentially. Do we have enough of these in place and enough of a time period to have a track record on whether these things work?
So there have been some evaluations done across multi-sites and individual sites. And the findings are relatively mixed on preventing recidivism. There are some practices that I think are a little bit more promising, but unlike what we see with drug treatment courts, there's not necessarily a best practices guide out there that's truly evidence-based on what kinds of factors need to be in place, how to interact with the defendant, how to interact with the victim, so that you really do reduce recidivism.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Patrick is with us in Madison. Patrick, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Patrick?
So there was a book published in 2018 by the psychologist David Buss called When Men Behave Badly that talks about this subject of domestic abuse. And one of the things he talks about is what's called the dark triad of personality traits, which includes narcissism, Machiavellianism, and psychopathy. And so what I was wondering is these studies about this dark triad of personality traits that are predictive of domestic abuse. To what extent has the justice system sort of evolved based on our understanding of those personality traits?
Interesting. Patrick, thanks for the call. In a court system, Danielle, is there this sort of psychological evaluation of a domestic abuse suspect?
Not in at least Milwaukee County. There might be in other domestic violence problem-solving courts across the country. But typically, there might be a risk assessment during pretrial and even preceding sentencing that mainly looks at risk of recidivism more generally. not necessarily looking at that triad specifically.
Thanks for the call, Patrick, at 800-642-1234. I wanted to get into the bail system, Danielle. There have been arguments for reducing cash bail. And when it comes to domestic violence, I've seen arguments that, hey, maybe it's not the monetary cash bail that's so important, but the condition side of things that we should be focusing on more. Do you have thoughts on that part of the equation?
Yeah, I think right now with COVID still lingering, it's a little bit more challenging for courts to make sure that defendants for domestic violence cases in particular are adhering to the conditions that are set on them. So some jurisdictions still haven't been doing pretrial sobriety testing. And we know that in a decent number of cases, the defendant and or the victim were using substances, whether alcohol or drugs, prior to the offense. So if you're not holding offenders accountable pretrial release, it might set the offender up for a situation of repeating an offense while still awaiting adjudication for that first offense.
Now, for people who are victims of domestic violence, do you know what kind of, are there resources out there in your area or elsewhere in the state that you might point people toward?
Yeah, there's some great resources out there. Because I'm from Milwaukee, I tend to know more about that area in particular. But Sojourner Family Peace Center is a really great resource for survivors of domestic violence. There's also the Women's Center in Waukesha. Even police departments are starting to have specialty like liaisons that aren't sworn officers, but their whole purpose is to provide a safe space for survivors of domestic violence to come forward, to get connected to services. There are definitely resources out there.
And as we wrap up just in our last minute, are there changes you'd like to see at any level in the legal system that you think could help prevent future acts of violence?
Yes. I think it's a really huge issue to tackle. One of the things I think is to have a stronger connection, almost like a wraparound kind of approach to offenders, especially if it's their first offense and they're coming through the legal system. Sometimes I think there's a little bit less accountability when judges aren't aware of if they're being compliant with conditions of release or if they're being compliant on probation, if they're having contact with the victim and they shouldn't be. So I think a little bit more oversight, but also wraparound of services and connecting to different kinds of services tailored to the individual needs of the offender can go a long way.
Danielle, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
Danielle Romaine Dagenhart is an assistant professor in the Department of Criminal Justice and Criminology at UW-Milwaukee. She was with us today talking about how violence can escalate in cases of domestic abuse and how that risk is treated in our legal system.